Macintosh.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Back to the Mac. I've neglected to mention last week that it's a Mac show for Mac people by Mac people, just so that Richard's wife is clear on what we're doing in our back rooms late at night. This week I've got Richard Harkness. Richard, hello.
Hi, Johnny.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay, Jacob can't join us again this week. He's slacking rather a lot these days, I think. I'm going to have words with him about that. But let's get into it. First of all, it's actually a story from last week. 9to5Mac reported that a Belgian consumer group was making a complaint about Apple warranties, about AppleCare warranties specifically, following a similar complaint from Italian authorities last year. Mm. Have you seen this, Richard?
Yeah, I remember the original case in Italy, and I was aware of it. I haven't read the article yet, but yeah, because they're basically, as far as I understand, it's kind of overlapping with people's normal consumer rights, isn't it? And certainly it does in the UK as well, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly seems to be the case. We've had legislation in the UK for some time regarding sale of goods, and the words like products need to be of merchantable quality and fit for purpose. Mm. And it's all very vague, and these things, you know, aren't specifically defined in law. But EU consumer law suggests that you should have a 2-year protection on electrical goods, a 2-year protection against manufacturing defects. Mm. And Apple seems to have been a little bit mealy-mouthed about this. It seems to be that if something fails within 1 year, then, you know, their customer service is excellent. If it's beyond 1 year and you've not taken out their AppleCare warranty at the additional cost, then it can be a lot more difficult to get satisfaction from them.
Mm. I think a lot of people, from what I hear, you know, choose to get that just to smooth things over, don't they? It's kind of the path of least resistance.
Well, yes, and I wonder if Apple is taking advantage of that to some extent. People know that Apple's customer service is second to none, and, you know, these gadgets are supposed to last beyond 1 year. If you bought a Mac, you'd certainly expect it to last, a few years. When I buy iPhones, you know, I always buy the AppleCare now because, you know, I've just had such good service when something has gone wrong at a later date. Of course, AppleCare warranties for your Mac, a lot more expensive. I think you're paying about £160 off the top of my head, in addition to the cost of the machine. And that's quite a bitter pill to swallow, I suppose, when you're supposed to have those rights anyway.
Hmm. Absolutely.
Have you had experience of AppleCare yourself, Richard?
Yeah, several times. It's not so much. I think I did take it in with me MacBook Air, but nothing needed to be done. They just did a system check and health check on it and stuff like that. But I've had a few things with me iPhone. I've got to say I couldn't fault them in the slightest. They're just. On three occasions, I've come away with a brand new iPhone. So
they do seem to be quick to replace the iPhones, I've noticed. But I'm also mindful of the fact that we're a Mac show, not an iPhone show. Mm. So I'm not sure I want to go into too much detail on the iPhone side of things.
I think the thing is with that is there's not an awful lot they can do in store, I suspect, with an iPhone.
Now, interestingly, I was speaking to John Bradbury on Twitter. John does a lot of repairs on Macs and iOS devices. Mm. And there did seem to be a particular problem with the home button on the iPhone 4. Mm. And I was asking John whether this was a similar problem on the 4S and the 5. And he says that the button is the same sort of design, but it now has a gasket to keep all the fluff and stuff out. And I think it was, you know, just fluff and dirt that was causing a bit of a dicky contact you know, on the iPhone 4, because it did seem to be a big problem.
It's interesting, isn't it? Such a simple little thing to rectify as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, I suppose customers are the beta testers for a lot of these products. But specifically regarding this EU statutory warranty issue. Apple has put it into its own words, and it's stating that for repair or replacement, EU consumer law covers you for defects that are present when you take delivery of the device. The Apple 1 year limited warranty covers you for defects arriving after you take delivery, and the Apple Care Protection Plan also gives you cover for defects arising after you take delivery, and of course that's extended to 3 years on 2 years on iOS devices and 3 years on the Macs. An important thing to consider here is that if you were, for example, to go in and buy a Mac and you were to buy, say, a time capsule at the same time, the Apple Care warranty would cover you for both devices.
It's always worth definitely always worth asking when you're buying it to ask the question, is my X covered by this?
Yeah.
Because they're not keen to promote that fact necessarily.
Well, they're not. I mean, they seem to be pushing you into an Apple Care Protection Plan so that you can get the same sorts of rights that the EU would expect you to have anyway. How you are supposed to prove that a defect arose after you took delivery, I don't know. I mean, there have been problems with machines. I mean, we talked about the iPhone 4 home button, that being a design issue, it seems. Time capsules in the past have been pretty flaky. The power supplies, as I understand, give up. My father-in-law has experience of that. It was about 2 years old. Didn't have Apple Care warranty on it. I don't think you can buy Apple Care warranty separately for a time capsule anyway. I'm not sure.
All right.
But, you know, they just didn't want to know. And it was just under 2 years. So, you know, under EU legislation, he should have been covered.
Yeah. I mean, I've had my in-laws, really quite embarrassing. I sold up the iMac quite highly to them and praised how good it was and how good the customer service was. And they got theirs and they had two successive iMacs break.
Oh, dear.
I was like, oh, I don't believe this. I feel awful now.
What went wrong with them?
One was probably a motherboard failure by the sounds of it.
That's not uncommon from what I understand.
And I'm not sure if that has some issue with the RAM in the other one. But anyway, it all got sorted. Again, I think in one instance, they just got a new one. And in the second instance, I think they took it away to be repaired and, you know, what have you. So, but bearing in mind, they're both, you know, certainly my father-in-law is pushing 70. My mother-in-law is in the mid-60s. Trying to carry a 21 and a half inch iMac around to a repair shop is not much fun, really.
It's not much fun. You try carrying the 27 inch, and I'm talking the full fat version, not these new skinny
skinny last year model.
That's it. They really are quite heavy if you have to carry them any distance. So it's not something you want to be having to take back to the Apple store all the time. Belgium Consumer Group has filed this complaint. Apparently, Apple was fined $1.2 million and an additional $264,000 for, quote, misleading consumers regarding two-year warranties mandatory by European law. It's a little surprising in a way that the rest of the European countries have been so quiet on this. I thought that, you know, perhaps some of the consumer groups in this country might have been on top of this, but it seems not to be the case, just Italy and Belgium so far.
No, Johnny, all we need to do in this country, as you well know, is just complain a lot about things. We don't do things about things, we just complain a lot about them.
It's the British way, isn't it, Richard?
It's the British way to do things, yeah, you just moan.
Well, talking of moaning, let me do a bit of that. I don't know if I'm going to moan, actually. It's not really a moan. It started off as a moan, and now I'm not so sure. It's just sort of become sort of guilt.
Tell me the story then.
My iMac had to go back to meet its maker. It had a Seagate hard drive, and as we know, they're a bit flaky. Apple has a recall on some iMac models that were fitted with Seagate hard drives. The recall lasts until April. We'll put a note in the show notes. I think it's about the 10th of April. Even if your Mac is, your iMac is outside of the Apple warranty, it's still valid for this recall. They've noticed that the Seagate hard drives are failing with more regularity than they'd expect, so they're having a preemptive recall. I took my Mac in last week, took it in at 9 o'clock in the morning. The genius there said, we've got no other Macs in for this repair today. He says, yours is the only one. We should be able to get it turned around very quickly. They normally quote 3 to 5 days. He said, it will certainly be no longer than 3 days. I'd imagine a lot quicker. I said, yep, that's great. We'll call you. Good. Off I go. Well, I think that was about Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning perhaps. Hadn't heard anything for a while. I phoned them Saturday evening to find out what was going on. The guy went away to find out. 2 minutes later, when he came back, he said, oh yeah, we've completed it now. It's ready for you to pick up. I said, well, funnily enough, I've just received an email in the 2 minutes I've been waiting for you to tell me it's ready for collection. A little coincidental, perhaps. I said, when did they get it? When did they get the job finished? He said, oh, about an hour ago. So I'm thinking, okay, the chap said on Wednesday morning said they should be able to turn it around pretty quickly.
Mm.
Chap on Saturday said they only just finished it. Okay, maybe it's taken them a while. Went in to collect it this afternoon. The guy said it was in, he's got his log there, it was in 9 o'clock Wednesday morning. It was on the bench by about 10:30. I don't know how long the job takes, an hour and a half maybe. But they had it all done and dusted by Wednesday afternoon. It's just that nobody phoned me.
Oh no!
So I was a little upset about that. You know, I've been without my Mac for, you know, best part of a week. We've had the snow in between, which has made it difficult to get back there.
Hmm.
So
you could have, if you'd known that, you could have just hung around, couldn't you, and gone back to pick it up later on in the day.
Well, I could have done. I'd have even popped back and you know, picked it up in the afternoon. Well, I went back to the office, popped it on the desk, got it out. It's got little dunches in the front leading edge of the footrest. It's got a nick in the aluminium on the back of the screen, and the screen on the left-hand side is not completely flush with the aluminium. There's a very tiny gap. It may only be half a millimetre or so, maybe a millimetre, but even so, it's not flush.
So it's got to go back again.
It's got to go back again. Not only that, they didn't install some software on there. They said they were going to. They're going to put the iLife suite on there for me. But, you know, that's the least of my worries. But here we go. This is an iMac that's 3 years old now. It was the subject of a hard drive recall, which they've done. They've not put the screen back on properly, so it's got to go in for that. Well, they should be able to do that while I wait. But I noticed these marks on it. Now, I'm fastidious when it comes to caring for my Macs. You know, there's not a mark on them. You know, nobody is allowed to touch my screen. Mm. You know, you go near my screen with your finger and, you know, I will knock you down. My Macs are, you know, they look brand new still, 3 years old.
Yeah, mate.
And
does,
I know a lot of people, you know, they care for this equipment like this. It's shiny equipment. You want it to look good, and you spend a lot of money on it. Why not? So I was a little disappointed with these marks on it. And to put it in context, there really are quite minor marks. I can notice them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody looking at it might not notice. But run your finger along it, and you can tell certainly there's a problem. Had a chat with Apple, the local Apple store, this afternoon on the phone, and, excuse me, that's me dropping my pencil. The Apple store are suggesting that I take the machine back and they replace the aluminium foot and they replace the aluminium body of the machine. So basically take out the innards and screen of my Mac and place it into a new one.
Hmm. So you get a refurb Mac?
Essentially.
Oh.
I think that's a bit over the top, really. It started to make me feel guilty. I started saying to the chap, well, these nicks are really quite small, actually, you know. Perhaps I'm being a bit fussy.
Stupid to go for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you? It's,
well, they damaged it. If you looked after it that well and they're the ones who've damaged it, I would get it done.
Well, yeah, maybe. It just seems like
I think the question is obviously how long they're going to take the Mac back off you for and whether you can be bothered to lose it for that long again.
Well, I suspect what I'll do is I'll take it into the store. I'll take it in at 9 o'clock in the morning. They'll say, oh, we should be able to turn this round in about 3 days, and I'll phone them back about 5 days later to find out what's gone on. Perhaps.
Sounds like that, doesn't it? Yeah.
It does.
You should ring them at the end of the day and go, it's ready, isn't it? Go on. I know
it is. Would you really do that? That's going to cost a fortune just for the replacement shell of the thing. It's, you know, aluminium. This isn't cheap stuff. And they're proposing replacing the whole thing, swapping out the screen and innards of my Mac and putting it in a new one.
You and I both know that we've paid well over the odds for the iMacs. You know, they don't cost as much as, nowhere near as much as what we get charged for them. So why not?
What if they cock something up, taking the stuff out and putting in a new one?
Then you get a brand new iMac, probably.
One of those skinny ones?
Yeah.
It's got no CD, DVD drive, has it?
That's true. Do you use them much?
No, not at all.
You just have to say to the guy, make sure you drop it.
Yeah. So, yeah, after this phone call this afternoon, I spent a long time on the phone to him, and there I am complaining about, you know, AppleCare not honouring their obligations under, you know, EU legislation. And there I am with a three-year-old iMac with some pretty superficial dinks in it at the end of the day, and they're proposing replacing all the aluminium on it for me. And that's just an amazing suggestion. There I am. I actually start feeling guilty and saying to the guy, no, you know, perhaps it's not that bad. Yeah, we've agreed he's going to put it on the notes for that serial number, and when I take it in to get the screen sorted out, they'll have a chat with me. So we'll see what happens.
See if your guilt's passed.
That's right. So
I want to have a look. I reckon as you sit there and stare at the screen, you keep seeing those dings. It'll just chip away your consciousness, won't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, on the one hand, these new skinny iMacs don't look any different to my iMac at the moment, because the way I look at it, I can't tell how deep it is.
No.
But, you know, when you've got a few little dinks on the leading edge of the footstand, then you can see them all the time. You notice them. It's a little frustrating.
Well, it would be more powerful than what you've got, wouldn't it?
It would be. Well, it wouldn't be. They'd be taking out the innards of mine and sticking it in a new one. But, yeah, one of the skinny ones, that would be certainly more powerful.
Yeah.
So, I think mine's fairly elderly now. It's Core 2 Duo, so it's been through, came with Snow Leopard, it's been through Lion and Mountain Lion. I really doubt that the Core 2 Duos are going to support OS X 10.9.
It'll get old yellowed, won't it, and taken out the back.
I think so.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that's enough about warranties. So I've not happy with not honouring the 2 years, and then suddenly I'm blown away by their offer of completely reshelling my three-year-old iMac. So I don't know where I stand on that after all. So what's next, Richard?
Oh, where are we up to? We were going to talk about, is this the next thing, the remote dialing?
Aye, we can talk about that.
Is it time for that then? There's probably just time for a quick mention, because it's very topical, is that it's just before the quarterly earnings for Apple, and the usual doom and gloom nonsense is surfacing again about, ooh, it's not going to be good this quarter, it's not going to be good this quarter, because of the alleged cutback in iPhone 5 production and iPad production and slump in stock price as well. But we'll wait and see. I reckon they'll come out and say, yeah, we've earned a bazillion dollars, X percent more than last year. And then the analysts will not be happy with whatever it is, and the share price will go down again. That sounds like a good summary.
It seems to be that, you know, these analysts keep coming out with what they think Apple should be worth, you know, what they think Apple is doing. Apple is notoriously secret about what products it's introducing. And sure, we've had more leaks over the last year or so, but previously under Steve Jobs, they did seem to run, you know, a pretty tight ship when it came to product secrecy. Mm. You've got all these people guessing. What is it? Gene Munster from Piper Jaffray. He's always banging on about Apple going to be bringing out a television. That's the perennial Apple rumor, that one now, isn't it? Goes a bit quiet on the Apple front. Let's revive the Apple TV rumors. So, it may be true. Maybe they will bring one out sometime. But it seems to be after each of these earnings calls, Apple announces, record sales figures once again. And then immediately after the stock prices dip again, because it's disappointing that they've managed to, sell more desktop machines than they had the previous quarter. I mean, what is it? Something like 26 consecutive quarters of growth.
And apparently that's unheard of, as far as I understand, in business terms.
And that's a disappointment.
Yeah, and if they only make, 14 billion extra, then they're all very disappointed, because they all predicted 20 billion. So it's crazy, absolutely crazy.
And the only thing I can think of, a decline in sales of Apple equipment, is that surely every bugger's got one by now.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. It's saturation, isn't it? And the other reason that I've been hearing they've slowed down orders and what have you, is because they had the pre-orders and the initial orders so well ramped up in the first place that they've now satisfied the initial demand and they're back to sort of business as usual.
Basically, they've got it onto, an even keel, a level footing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When is this earnings call, Richard? Wednesday.
It's this week, isn't it? Yeah.
This week. So by the time this podcast comes out, Apple prices will have dipped because everybody will be disappointed with sales of a gazillion devices.
Yep.
I expect.
And it's always interesting to listen to the small print of these things, because sometimes
Richard, can you listen to small print, and if you can, what font is it in?
It's Comic Sans. No. No, sorry, that was appalling English. So that's you. That was you last week and me this week. So what I was being is, you can't listen to it, but certainly the people, the journalists who are there will listen very carefully, because sometimes, certainly under Tim Cook anyway, they've made a couple of little hints and things like that during some of these earning calls. So nothing specific, but usually there's some little tips over that there may be lots to look forward to this year, or something of a vague nature of that.
Anything in mind, Richard? Anything you think might be coming up?
The Mac Pro has got to be coming, hasn't it? I think in the next 6 months we might see the Mac Pro.
It's long overdue, isn't it? A lot of people are desperate for that.
And there's a big vacant gap now. If all the iOS devices have been pushed into the later half of the year, which is looking the way, unless we're going to a 6-monthly release cycle, like some people think we might be. If we're sticking to an annual release cycle, then there's not an awful lot in the first two quarters of the year now. So we need something. So maybe the Mac Pro, and maybe a refresh on some of the laptop lines.
I wonder how they can move to a 6-month schedule, because people expect them to revolutionise all the time now. And, to iterate a product, to have a speed bump, to increase the memory, to increase the storage space, doesn't seem to be enough for people these days. They seem to expect, they don't even know what they expect, but they seem to expect more.
Yeah, it's got to look new. And I think if the iPhone 5 sales have been disappointing, and I don't think they have been, then maybe one of the reasons for that is it's actually sometimes hard to tell that somebody's got one.
Does Apple make an iPhone?
Well, I think it's the iPhone, isn't it?
Oh, what I mean is, does Apple make a telephone? I tried doing that joke last week and it didn't work.
It's that app with the telephone button symbol on it. Have you pressed that? I've never really pressed it.
To be honest, I don't really use it for that, no.
Like most people know.
Anyway, let's talk about, you wanted to talk about remote dialing into your Mac.
Well, I'm not sure what use I would have for this particularly, but I was just interested at work, and I was thinking, oh, it'd be nice to be able to do this and control my Mac and things like that. And it just crossed my mind. I was wondering how much you could do remotely. Like, say, for example, could you listen to your iTunes music? Could you have access to all your bookmarks and all that kind of thing?
Well, I think in the dim and distant past, iTunes did allow streaming of music over the internet, but I think they removed that some time ago.
Oh, right.
I think I'm right in saying that. Regarding your bookmarks, if you use Safari on your Mac,
mm-hmm,
and you use iCloud, then you should be able to see, by clicking on that little cloud icon that you have in Safari,
yeah,
you should be able to open a window which tells you what you have open in Safari on each of your devices.
Yeah. Well, that's easy if you're working on Macs everywhere you go, but unfortunately I have to work on Windows outside of the house.
What's that?
You know, that awful mess that most of the world has to use.
You know what, I was using that awful mess today, and to install 12 updates on shutting down my laptop, do you know how long it took?
20 minutes?
I'll give you one more guess.
Oh, God. More?
Yep.
25.
12 updates. 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I'll give you one more guess.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
Over 2 hours.
What?
Yeah. That's Windows.
It took it 2 hours to shut down?
Yeah, because it was installing 12 updates.
What was it running? What version?
Oh, it's Windows XP. The machine's only 3 years old. It was at a time when you had a choice of XP or Vista.
Right.
And, you know, the wise choice was to stick with XP.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a Lenovo ThinkPad. You know, it's a decent machine. You know, as Windows PCs go.
Mm-hmm.
It just took an absolute age.
That's incredibly slow.
Terrible.
There's got to be something wrong there.
Yeah, it's running Windows.
Why is it still running XP anyway? I thought that was no longer supported.
I think it is supported at the moment. Something like 1 in 4 PCs around the world still run Windows XP.
Wow.
Yeah.
But like the 13,000 black and white licenses still in the UK.
Yeah, monochrome television licenses. We'll have to put something in the show notes so that Jacob can read about what a television license is.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know what they do in the States. Oh, man. We're missing you now, Jacob. We need the US insight.
We need our colonial cousin's perspective on this, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, we are trying to talk about remote dialing into your Mac here, Richard.
And, where are we going with this?
I don't know. I thought you had a use case scenario for this, but it seems that you don't. It's just idle curiosity.
It's more that I keep reading. There's lots of different services, isn't there? And I was wondering, like, you know, what you could. Well, for a start, would you have to? So you could answer this question first. Would you have to install software on a Windows machine to be able to dial in?
Or
can you do it through a browser?
Yeah, yes, maybe, and yes. shall I make it easy? I'll tell you how I do it.
Yeah.
Okay. What I would suggest is if you're wanting to access your Mac from another device, be that device your iPhone, your iPad, another Mac, or a Windows PC,
mm-hmm,
I'd recommend something called Log Me In.
Right.
If you go to logmein.com, they have a product. It's a screen sharing application. It allows you to remotely connect to computers that you set up. You need to install a little program on each device that you wish to access. So, for example, your Mac at home, you'd install this little log me in program. It would mean that if you were then at a Windows PC at a remote location, you could just go to logmein.com, sign in with your username and password, and it will list your PC, list your PCs or list your Macs, and you can choose which one you want to log into. And you can do that through a browser window, so you don't have to install any software on your machine at work. Perhaps work wouldn't allow you to install anything anyway.
Yeah, so
you can just use the browser to access your machine at home. And it will present your desktop within the browser window, and you'd then be able to operate your computer at home.
What's the limitations of what you can do then?
Well, it's probably easier to ask what is it that you're wanting to do with a remote connection like that. I mean, in terms of streaming music, I don't think that's going to work. It doesn't work quite like that. I'm not sure whether you can listen to the sounds of the remote machine. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can. But I don't think, you know, it's really for that sort of purpose for streaming music like that.
No. No, I was just curious about that. I'm not sure why I was thinking that, to be honest.
The reason I recommend Log Me In is because you can access it via a browser window. It also means that if you need to look after your in-laws Mac for them, you could have remote access to that. You know, they could phone you up, Richard, show us how to do this, and you can just via a browser window log in, see their machine, and you can just basically watch what they're doing. And if you're having a telephone conversation and being able to see what somebody's doing on the screen, or then being able to take over and showing them, then that can be quite useful. It's a lot easier than trying to explain in words.
Oh yeah.
You know, click that button on the left, you know, in the top right corner of the window or something.
Yeah. The one that looks like a rocket. No, they're not that one.
So, that, you know, Log Me In, they do paid versions, you get extra features, they do a free version as well. And I have it set up to access all of my machines, you know, wherever they are. And also, family, you know, Macs belonging to family members. So, my father-in-law and my parents, for example. So if they have a problem with their Mac, I can access their machine and, you know, see what's going on.
That sounds really good. I may just give that a go just for the fun of it.
In terms of accessing your Macs otherwise, from Mac to Mac, you'll have heard of Back to My Mac, which is an iCloud feature that you can set up. It makes it easy to access remote Macs. The only thing I'd say about that is you won't be able to do that from a Windows machine.
Yeah.
So there's an obvious limitation there. Log Me In does give you greater flexibility in that respect.
How well does it sort of... have you tried it from a Windows machine?
Yep, many times.
Does it render quite well, sort of thing, or is it a bit sort of stuttery, or...?
Well, it does depend upon the quality of the connection.
Right.
So if you have a fast broadband connection, it should be pretty good. There will be a little bit of a delay. If you've got a dial-up connection or a fairly slow connection, I think it does step down the colour depth, you know, the number of colours, you know, in order to conserve bandwidth.
Right.
And you can get by with it on a slower connection, but, you know, it does get a little frustrating if you're used to, sitting in front of a machine and it being very responsive.
Sounds good.
Does that satisfy your needs for remote dialing?
I'd like to say I don't have anything specific. I think I'd be interested to see how it works and if it was any use to me, I guess, is the main thing.
I think that it is very useful. I mean, I'd recommend you maybe set it up on one of your Macs at home and then try accessing via Log Me In.
I think, to be honest, I think there's a little bit of me that just kind of misses being away from your Mac. I just wish I was working on my Mac at work.
Well, this is always the difficulty, isn't it? If you have to use a PC, you really do appreciate the Mac when you get time on that. A couple of other things that I wanted to talk about, Richard. The first was for somebody wanting to buy a desktop Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we've just had these new skinny iMacs launched in December.
Mm.
What would make a sensible purchase? Now, it's interesting this. I was thinking about this question last night, and Jose Reyes on Twitter has actually asked a similar question today. So I thought we'd talk about it briefly.
Mm.
Now, I'm sitting here in front of an iMac, and, you know, it's a beautiful all-in-one computer.
Mm.
But it's 3 years old, and it's quite a lot slower than the new ones. I just wondered, if you were buying a desktop Mac again, maybe to replace your current iMac, what would you be looking at?
Personally, no, I can tell you what I think probably the sensible thing to go for is, and then I'll tell you what I would probably go for.
Mm-hmm.
I think the sensible thing to probably get is a Mac Mini, because
mm-hmm.
You've got more upgradability in that. And you get quite a lot of bang for your buck, I think, with a Mac Mini.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've also got the option of you can put your, you know, display of your choosing. And you can save a bit of money and get a good quality display, but a non-Apple one. Or you can buy, you know, a Thunderbolt display or whatever, and then all you have to change over is the Mac Mini bit of it. But if it was me, I'd probably buy a 27-inch iMac, to be quite honest.
Well, there is something to be said for having an all-in-one device, something that's, you know, very thin, very stylish, takes up little space on the desk.
Yep.
It looks fantastic, and I think that's probably what attracted me to buy an iMac just over 3 years ago.
Mm.
But I was thinking about this question last night, because my iMac is 3 years old, and it reminds me of how Dell used to sell PCs. I don't know if they still sell them like this, because they're not selling as many these days, and I'm not buying them. But the way they used to sell PCs was you selected your tower system or your desktop system, you selected your base unit, and then you'd select what monitor you wanted. And there was never an option to exclude the monitor. You always had to buy a new monitor with a new PC. Now, of course, buying PCs, you'd be buying a new PC every 3 years because, you know, you had to just to have something
survive.
That was still workable, yeah. So you end up buying a new PC unit and a new monitor where your previous monitor was probably good enough.
Mm.
And it seemed like a terrible waste to me. So it got me thinking last night, you know, if I was to do this again, perhaps go for a Mac Mini. If I had an iMac kind of budget, probably go for the 27-inch Thunderbolt display.
Mm.
And then in 3 years' time, when my Mac Mini was getting a little slow, or maybe Apple was threatening not to support that particular processor, that particular model with the latest operating system, what you could do is you could go out and buy an up-to-date Mac Mini, plug it into your existing screen, which is a fantastic screen. Or, of course, if budget is an issue, you could have a large screen from another manufacturer.
Mm.
And there'd still be enough value left in that Mac Mini you bought 3 years ago to sell on and put towards the cost of the new one.
Yep.
And of course, as you've identified correctly, upgradability. I know that you can upgrade the memory in the new 27-inch iMacs, the skinny ones, not in the 21.5-inch iMacs. Upgrading the hard drives in the current iMac is a bit of a palaver, but is possible if you're brave. In the new ones, you know, you don't want to go there, really.
No.
In an iMac, a lot easier. If you're handy with the little screwdrivers, excellent guides on iFixit. You change the memory very easily for a start. You know, hard drive, that's doable as well.
Mm, yeah, I mean, I did the memory on my iMac, because it's just a no-brainer. It's so easy to do. There's plenty of I read a guide, and I watched a couple of YouTube videos as well, just to kind of give me a bit of confidence. So it's quite nice to see somebody actually doing it.
And memory from somewhere like crucial.com/UK. I've been using them for over a decade now. They are very, very good. Never had a problem with them.
That was brilliant. And once you know the exact sort of model of your Mac, you can just whack that into their website and it will give you memory that matches up perfectly, doesn't it? So,
well, it does, and of course, if you're not clear on how to work out which memory you need, they do have a little tool on their website that will do that for you. It will tell you precisely what kits are available for your particular machine, so that's very useful as well. So memory is an easy upgrade on the current Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Hard drive is possible.
Yeah.
And of course, you're going to have plenty of value left in the device when it's 3 years old, if you wish to upgrade. And you're probably being more environmentally friendly, aren't you?
Oh, certainly.
You're buying one screen. I mean, if you can afford the 27-inch Thunderbolt display, that's fantastic. But if you can't, you can buy another screen, and you know, you're just changing out the computer.
Yeah. And like you say, you're not having to change that over. And the other thing, I suppose, that perk is if your Mac goes in for repair and you've got some other, you know, computer or whatever sitting around, you'd probably be able to hook that up into your screen as well whilst you're waiting for the repairs to come through and stuff. So
just thinking about it in terms of costs, Richard, you know, the cost for a Mac Mini and a Thunderbolt display comes out just a little over the entry-level 27-inch iMac. It's maybe 80-100 quid more. Of course, mm-hmm. you'll need to buy a keyboard and mouse on top of that. You know, that makes it a bit pricier. But, you know, come 3 years' time, you take out your old Mac Mini, you sell that, you're going to get 200-300 quid for that towards a new one. As soon as you've replaced your Mac Mini the first time, your quid's in, essentially. Whereas if you're going down the iMac route, it's an expensive business.
Mm. I'm not sure what it would take to get me to get rid of my iMac. I think it would have to be, you know, getting to the end of its line, basically, where I couldn't upgrade the OS.
Yeah.
Any further.
Now, what I'd suggest for those who like a nice, tidy desktop and that all-in-one look of the iMac, but to go down the flexibility route of the 27-inch screen with the Mac Mini, 12 South do a little shelf. It's called the Backpack 2. It's a little shelf that attaches to the back of the monitor, and you can actually mount vertically your Mac Mini, so it can be out of sight. So all you see is the screen. So, you know, if you've got a few extra quid and it can extend to the Backpack 2, then that can be pretty useful too. So I think, you know, we've all come to a similar conclusion here on this.
There is a third way.
Go on.
Which, you know, it might not be the most cost-effective way, but it would make a very flexible way of working as well. You could have your display and then like a little sort of dock-type station for a laptop. And you could run your display from your laptop, and then you've got portability, and you've got the big screen when you're at home as well.
Now, I'm a big believer in, you know, only having that sort of portability if you need it. I think that the laptops are a bit of a compromise. Now, you know, you've got both the iMac and the MacBook Air, so you know, you're perhaps better qualified to speak on this than I. But with all our stuff moving to the cloud these days, we can put so much there. It saves having to carry around a big gadget. I listen to people who used to carry around MacBooks, and they say that they now carry around iPads.
Yeah.
Because they can do a lot of what they did on the laptop, they can now do on the iPad, and of course it's much more portable.
Yeah.
And no, also, I'm worried about, you know, laptops. Especially if you're a fairly static user, you know, you're at a desk in an office in your house or something. The constant charging and depleting and charging and depleting and charging and depleting of the battery, your battery life will suffer. Your battery life is going to suffer anyway on a MacBook, you know, regardless of, you know, how you use it. It just seems to be a point of failure for those machines, when those machines could go on a lot longer. And what you're finding with the modern Macs is that the batteries are, they're sealed units, they're glued in to the MacBook Airs, they're not a user serviceable part. So you might find that in 2 or 3 years, if you're unlucky, that your battery life is absolutely woeful because of, you know, the constant charging and depleting.
I think it's probably more a niche user case, but I just wanted to put that out there as an option as well.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's a graphic designer at the office. She uses MacBook Pro plugged into an Apple Cinema display, and she's got the two screens there, and she works like that. She's constantly lugging her MacBook from home to work to home to work all the time. And, you know, I've got an iMac set up at work. I've got an iMac set up at home. Everything's in the cloud. I walk between, and, you know, I carry nothing heavier than an iPhone.
Yep.
So it depends on your budget and depends on your requirements, I suppose. But I certainly think that going the Mac Mini and screen route is an interesting one, and perhaps what I might look at next time.
Yeah, me too, definitely.
Whether that's useful for Jose, I don't know, but I think we might be thinking along similar lines to him there. So certainly interesting. Have we got anything else to discuss before we get onto hot hardware, Richard?
No, I think that's about it.
Okay. Hot hardware. I found a little gadget. It's called a Blue Lounge Sumo Cable Tidy. It's a compact cable tidy for your Mac. And if I can try and explain it to you, it's a fairly small box. It's not quite a cube. It's about half the height of a cube. And it's got a little gap underneath. And that gap underneath will accommodate two cables. So you can feed the cables, the charging cables from the Mac to your iPhone, for example. And this little gadget is quite interesting. It uses something called, I don't know if this is just marketing bump, it may well be, but it says Japanese micro suction avoids marking your furniture, can be repositioned easily, won't slip off surfaces including glass, sleek weighty design for keeping your cables tidy. A bit more information on Japanese micro suction. It's a technique that doesn't use adhesives and won't leave a sticky mark on your desk. It allows the Sumo to stick to most smooth surfaces, even glass, and can be easily repositioned at any time. I mean, this really is a gadget for the Mac user that has everything, isn't it?
Well, what strikes me about it is I've got to say, first of all, it looks very nice. You know, I'd be quite happy to have that on my desktop. And it's not overly expensive neither. So, but is that right? It can only accommodate two wires?
Certainly from the pictures that it has, you've got a picture of the gadget itself. And it's difficult actually to ascertain the scale from the first photo, but the second photo shows a view from beneath, which has sort of two sort of opposing half moons, if you like, which must be the Japanese micro suction pads. Yeah. And it's got channels for two cables by the looks of it.
Yeah, so you don't get much for that. That's nice.
But how many things are you charging from your iMac, Richard?
Well, it depends on what you're using it with. I haven't got that for my setup because I can manage without that, but I did get a similar sort of thing, which brings me on nicely to the one that you prompted me to think about, which is one called Quirky Cordy's Cable Management System. And with that you get, I think it's five separate little slots to put your cables in, and again it's got a weighted base to it. Its footprint I think is probably more compact, although it's difficult to tell, but it looks like it'd be more compact than the, what's it called, Blue Lounge Sumo. And now that's five rubber grips with four slots. I'm just having a look at how many I've got. And I think I've got three or four cables through mine for the MacBook Air. I've got a power one, a USB one, not USB, sorry, an Ethernet one, and the external hard drive one as well. So to stop them all falling down the back of the desk.
Okay, I mean, certainly both of these gadgets useful for stopping the cable slipping down behind the back of the desk, which is often a frustration. To put in some kind of context, the Quirky Cordies cable management system of which you speak is £6.23. That's probably about $10. The Blue Lounge Sumo Cable Tidy, our hot hardware of the week, is $9.95 from the Apple Store, which is probably in the order of around $15. Only holds two cables, but then, you know, I imagine most people would be charging an iPad and an iPhone at the very most. Mm. What do you reckon? Is this hot? It does have Japanese micro-suction pads.
I'm going to say no.
Not hot?
No, I think it's nice. I just don't think it does enough.
$9.95.
Yeah, $9.95 to keep two cables tidy.
Yeah, you know, when I first saw it, I thought it might be hot, but I didn't buy it, so that would suggest that it's not. It's probably a good stocking filler for the Apple fanatic in your life. But, yeah, that's it. Blue Lounge Sumo Cable Tidy. It's not hot.
Would you get a Quirky Cordies?
No. You know what I'd do? A Quirky Cordy certainly isn't hot. It looks like something that Bill Gates designed.
It's nice and simple. I think it's cool.
I think the Blue Lounge Sumo Cable Tidy is cooler.
It is. There's no doubt. It's better looking. Yeah.
Well, let me give you a top tip then for stopping the cables going down the back of the desk. Mm. Use bulldog clips. Use big bulldog clips and thread the cables through. Mm-hmm. And then if they do slide down the back, they'll. In fact, that won't work on the lightning cable, will it?
I don't know. I haven't got a lightning cable.
Yeah, it's not going to work on the lightning cable. I think my top tip is deficient. I think probably on that bombshell, we ought to leave it there.
Yeah, but I mean, I think everyone's experienced that with cables falling down the back of the desk, and it is a bit of a headache.
Wireless charging, that's the way forward. That's the future, kids.
Oh, it would be great. I don't want to have to plug anything into anything else. That's what I want the future to look like.
You heard it here first. Should we wind it up now, Richard?
Yeah, sure.
So where can we find you on the internet?
Hey, get me. I'm on certainly on Twitter a fair bit, at Rich Harkness, and also occasionally writing on my blog, areyougettingit.co.uk.
Okay, and I'm Johnny Winter. You can find out more about me at about.me/JohnWinter, or you can Twitterize me at Johnny_Winter. And I think, as always, we only had a few things to talk about it, and we've spent twice as long talking about them. Let's see what we can come up with for episode 7. Richard, thanks very much.
Good night, Johnny.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Macintosh.
Back to the Mac is brought to you by Q Broadcasting. Find us at q.am, that's q-u-e.am. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Find out more about Tariq at tdmss.com. Follow us on Twitter at bttmpodcast. Macintosh.